I'm really looking forward to our next presentation. I think it was about November or so, I read a post. Somebody was talking about somebody who had left the church with seven kids and so forth and so on. And Ken, I think you posted something about your story, and it just alerted me to their story because it was a unusually quick exit from the church. And I decided I would give them a call or write them and see if they'd be interested in coming together as a couple. What interested me was the things that they said about how they were dealing with it with their children and the times they had been meeting with their children to kind of remap their lives, their value systems, and just how to do life without Mormonism. And they're very busy people, so I felt like it was great that they made the time to come and do this for us. And without any further ado, I will announce Ken and Ruth Ann Sullivan.
Okay, so can you guys hear me?
Okay, can you guys hear me good? I'm going to test yours real quick.
Oh, Steve's talking in it right in here.
Okay. All right, so I'm the Ken part. This is the Ruth Ann part. So, you need us to move around?
Is that good? Okay. All right.
It's going to make her look even taller. I'm actually taller than her, guys. This makes her look taller because of the cowgirl boots and...
But our kids always have drawn pictures of the family, and I'm always taller than him. We'll let you be the judge.
Don't know why that works like that. So I have this kind of interesting background where I was this kid who was raised as a Mormon kid, kind of, and I had really, really rocky teenage years and ended up kind of going off the deep end pretty far, and had this massive conversion experience when I was about 21 years old, and that experience was through just a number of experiences, powerful experiences that I had never felt before, got just big time converted and had, you know, definitive answers that Joseph Smith was a prophet, that the Book of Mormon is the Word of God, that yada yada. And so this conversion took me on a mission late, and I served in California, Riverside, in Spanish-speaking, and served my guts out. I had heard that the prettiness of my wife was in direct proportion to how hard I served, and obviously I served my guts out. And so I come back having just had this amazing experience and didn't flinch at all about any of the negative. I mean, I just naturally I'm an optimist. And I had this experience that was just, even though I had rough times like every single missionary does, I was out there to serve my guts out. And I came, and I remember always telling myself while I was there, man, I can see that you're supposed, that the whole key to this whole thing is the members. Man, when I get back home, I'm going to be the best member missionary I can possibly be, because that's the key. I mean, these missionaries can't do this all together. We got to like find ways to come together with the full-time effort and the members. And so all of my thoughts, my entire identity has been wrapped around this notion of I'm one of these chosen ones that's supposed to go forth and tell the message to the residue of the people. Moroni chapter 7. So anyway, we get on this path of life and five kids. I mean, met Ruth Ann up at BYU Idaho, and you want to say anything about that part of?
Just met, it was Rick's at the time.
Yeah, and this fairy tale story of us falling in love, and we have the church as our anchor here. We have all of our beliefs together, and what else do we want to say about that? anything about
we
that time?
We were just all in. And I guess I can just share a little bit about me. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I was raised in American Fork, Utah, in the heart of Utah County, and I had two wonderful, diligent, fantastic parents that I wouldn't have traded to this day for anything. They're wonderful. And, you know, I had lots of family, those that lived the faith, those that didn't. I loved them all. They were all, you know, wonderful people. But I was all in, completely, 100%, completely in. And our story that we'll share with you right now is, you know, took us on a journey that I never in a million years would ever have dreamed would be our story. But here we are. It's our story. It's real. It's honest. And we'll get started with that.
So,
Backing up, I guess we can say we've both been all in, and we've lived all over the country. We've lived in Florida, we've lived in Kentucky and Texas, and we didn't want to move back to Utah because we loved being missionaries. I mean, we truly loved sharing, and Ken had put together a CD, kind of like a pass-along card on tape that he had audio recorded, and anyway, shares part of
it. I got copyright permission from the church to put this special background music on there, and it was really well edited, and by the time when you were listening, you're like, man, he sounds smooth. And I was just like, it's just edited, trust me. But it sounded really good, and I had all this stuff verbatim out of Preach My Gospel in there of, you know, and this is in young, humble Joseph and 14-year-old farm boy. And I had the whole story in there, and my story, my conversion, and I let him listen to a prophet's voice, and then I gave him this invitation at the end to just be open to listen to the missionaries or maybe get a free copy of the Book of Mormon. And we made up, over time, long story short, we gave out about 2,500 of those as our way of, like, planting seeds. And we had a lot of, like, fruits that came from it over time.
That was the way we saw it. We're just planting seeds. But, you know, from living all over and seeing people of differing faiths, differing backgrounds, different, you know, I knew that there was happiness, of course, outside of Mormonism. But I just was so happy in Mormonism, I never in a million years dreamed. I was never one. I mean, I definitely thought about things. I definitely had questions like, I guess we'll figure that out later. But I was just busy about life and happy with it. So, and we both were, like we were saying, we were all in. You know, everything we had was, all of our goals, all of our dreams, everything for us, for our kids, was all wrapped up in Mormonism. And I remember, you know, getting to a point where I'm like, holy cow, it's not just walking away from something. You have to reconstruct. There's so much reconstruction that has to happen now. Now, how do we do that, you know? But
yeah,
back to our story.
So what do we want to talk about next? How I got started. So this last fall, I had been going back and forth. We live up in Eden, which is up just in the Ogden Valley, east of Ogden, in the mountains. It's just absolutely gorgeous. But I was driving down quite often down to Utah County, and we were putting a company together. And I was listening to Tad Callister's Infinite Atonement, just strengthening my relationship with the Savior, and going back and forth. I come to this spot where he is talking about the depth and the breadth and the magnitude of the atonement, and he brought up this concept of that Jesus Christ is the only Savior of all time, of all people, of all planets, of everywhere. And I was just like, well, what about this whole, you know, like I thought, you know, as man is, God once was, and as God is, man may become. And I mean, certainly God the Father would have had a Savior as well to go through his mortal experience. And anyway, I was just contemplating all this stuff, and like I had other kinds of questions in the past, but I just have always found a way to say, oh, I'll figure that out. You know, obviously we're going to figure that out later on. And then I got to thinking, well, if I lived on some other planet, would I really like buy off on that, you know, this alien guy who lived on some other planet saved me from my sins, and I'm just be like, I don't know if I'd buy that. And so I'm like having this, this question, like, I don't know if this is like gelling well with me. There's got to be a better answer. And then I went and I looked at what the leaders were saying. It was some contradictory stuff. And so I really, for the first time, I mean, I'd always considered myself very open. I had some anti-Mormon books on the shelf. I'd always considered myself like, you know, very open to this kind of stuff because I'm a missionary. And of course I have to like be able to know how to talk about critics' claims and stuff. And so I'm over about a period of about a month or so. It was about a month.
Just at Thanksgiving and then the following week. You were bringing stuff up. He was wanting to, he just shared it with family, you know, and some close friends.
I was like, hey, just trying to get their ideas. Like, what do you think about this?
I'm kind of wrestling with this. What do you think? And they just throw out their thoughts. I was like, don't know, don't really care. moving right along. anyway.
I'm like, how can you just think like that? I got to figure this out.
Trust me, I think like that. It works just fine.
So I had really got to a point where I was just like, I'm going to have to figure this one out like when I die because it's not going to happen right now. And I know the church is true, so I'm going to have to let this go. And I'm like getting ready, like I'm mentally in the process of like shelving this issue. And I happened to, and this is kind of a longer story. I'll just give you the cliff notes on it. A buddy of mine had brought up John DeLynn's name a couple of times. Because he knew him through an acquaintance, and he just was fascinated by the story of this guy who's in the church who is not your average member, and I'd heard his name, and then I happened to have posted this video for the missionaries. They were entering a video into the Huntsville Film Festival, and I helped him put together this video about overcoming adversity, and when I did that, I put in some tags of LDS missionaries and different tags in there, and I got this recommended videos here and there of different things that, and one of them was Mormon Stories podcast with a name that I recognized from the past, and I'm like, whoa, there's only got to be one of those guys, and so I just clicked on it, and I was like, Ruth Ann, come in here. And
it was somebody that I had known really well, and so we watched this podcast, and we were like, whoa. But that's the only connection to Mormon Stories we had. And so time goes on, and because we had watched this one and because Ken knew about John DeLynn from before, Ken was reading, there was a hit piece by
the Greg Smith. I clicked on this thing about, and I don't know how many of you know about this, the Greg Smith wrote this 100-page scholarly work, you know, just trying to basically discredit John DeLynn saying, hey, isn't it disingenuous for somebody to be, you know, an active member of the church and supposedly answering these kinds of questions and then saying this kind of thing on his Facebook page. And I was just fascinated that he had spent so much time on that process. I was like, man, I wouldn't have normally read that kind of thing, but I was fascinated. And so before I knew it, I'm like 50 pages into this thing and thinking, I can't believe it. I'm going to read all 100 pages of this thing. But the thing that completely set me off the rails was he got about halfway through and he mentioned this issue that for the purposes of, because I know for a fact that we're going to have a lot of people that we love and respect that are going to watch us, that we don't feel like it's our job to bring up the issues to them. But he brought up something that he acknowledged. And I'm like, and him and all of his colleagues are acknowledging it. And I'm like, what? You can't be telling me this right now. Like, I'm already just getting ready to shelf this thing. And now you're telling me that I was just like, I can't believe this. And so now I'm like set into this little tailspin of, I'm having some doubts. But it can't possibly be that from anything other than just from Satan, because he's just challenging me, and I got to strengthen my faith here. I got to figure this out because I'm just gonna become a better missionary here.
So this is where I come into the story. We talk about everything. I mean, Ken's my best friend, and so we're in the middle of, and this is last December. So like life is happening really fast. We have company that's just left, companies that's getting ready to come the following week. Our son is wrestling. It's crazy busy. And we had this morning where we had just enough time to go finish our last-minute Christmas stuff. And anyway, that morning, I mean, things had been so busy. I had just had a conversation with two of our kids, our older kids, and I had said, you guys, if you're going to make a mess, that's fine, but you've got to clean it up A to Z. None of this leaving stuff out, leaving crumbs all over the counter. The crumbs was really getting to me. So
this is the only time this has ever happened.
Only. Never have. Anyway, so I had gone in to get ready, and Ken comes out. He puts toast in for me. And I come out, and we're in a hurry, and he pulls the toast out, sets it on the counter, gets crumbs everywhere, and he picks them up. Here you go. I made this toast for you. And I'm like, can you wipe up the crumbs?
And we were in a big-time hurry. And excited, like, to have our only little window of, like, going shopping together.
It was our date. We were going to go, yeah. You know? Anyway, so he's like, well, I was thinking the kids could, and, you know, both the kids I had just talked to were sitting right there, right, mind you. And I'm like, well, I had just talked to the kids about cleaning up, so maybe you just wipe up the... And he's like, okay. Anyway, wipes it up. And I didn't say it that sweet, I'll be honest. Anyway, so we walk out to the garage, and Ken goes, Ruthann, I don't have a problem with what you said, but I do have a problem with how you said it. And I'm like, well, like, what's the problem with cleaning up the crumbs?
And she wasn't quite ready yet.
We all know where that's going to take us, right? Anyway, I went shopping alone. Anyway... And I was so sad. I was so sad. And so anyway, we have a wrestling tournament at the end of the day. And after the wrestling tournament, we're waiting for our son in the car. And I said, Ken, I'm really sorry. I was so rude. And I was not willing to be accountable and sorry for it. And he said, Ruthann, I'm so sorry. I wasn't more patient like I normally am. Normally that kind of stuff, he might address it, but kind of funny and, oh, sorry, you know. Anyway, I said, yeah, I'm really sorry. And he said, I'm so sorry that I wasn't more understanding, more patient. And we both, you know, will you forgive me? I'm sorry. And he says, I've just had a lot on my mind lately. And I said, because I'd never heard him question things before, though I didn't, it wasn't a big deal that he brought anything up. I'd had questions like that before and brought it up and thought about it, you know. So, but he said, yeah, I'm having questions. And I said, well, you know, God is a God. He said, and he said, you know, I don't know whether to just forget about it. I've been so happy. I've just been so happy. And I said, you know, Ken, I'm like, God is a God of truth. He would never have us hide from the truth. He'd always want us to seek for what is true. And he's like, you're right. And he knew that. But here he felt conflicted because here you have us, our whole lives, everything. And he's genuinely having this question. And so for me to say that was... like, okay, I said, go look for your answers. I think you should. And so now when I said that, I had no idea what was entailed. I
had no idea. Rabbit hole.
And to be honest, like, I look back and I'm like, you know, would I? Like, would I have engaged? I mean, I want to know the truth, but wow, this has been tough. This has been real tough. Anyway, so a couple days go by. In the rush of the Christmas, we're crossing each other's paths. And I said, Ken, I said, have you found answers to your questions? And he stopped dead in his tracks, and his eyes filled with tears. And he said, Ruthann, I have never had more honest questions in all my life. And I was like, what? Like what? And he said, I don't even want to pull you into this. I want to just get it figured out. And then, you know, we can talk about it. And I said, Ken, I'm your wife. I'm like, you have to tell me, you know, like we're in this together. And so he proceeds to tell me that he had, on that piece, he had learned about Fair Mormon. So he had gone thinking, okay, I'm going to a safe place to learn. So he goes to Fair Mormon and is bombarded, not with the one issue. That issue became a nil point.
Well, as it was I'm like, sure all of you know, within like 5 minutes, you like, what? Whoa. I've never heard of that word. I've never heard of that stuff. I mean, these guys aren't saying it's not true. They're saying it is true. We all know it's true, and here's how we're dancing around it. And man, I was...
So he tells me, like, he tells me a few of the issues, and just, like, four. And I was like, what? How come I have never heard of this? And I start doing, you know, I guess... mental gymnastics, trying to be like, well, maybe, you know, like, you know, like trying to come up with it, but like, okay,
she's merciful.
Okay, we gotta, but we do need to look in. I mean, this generally, you know, I'm genuinely deserves her attention. We gotta figure this out.
And at this point, just for the record, I'm still very, very much like, okay, we're just wrestling here, and I'm really gonna gain some extra faith here, and it's gonna make me that much more of a powerful missionary.
And I genuinely thought the same thing. I was more like, what, how come we haven't learned this, you know? And so Ken says, well, what we need to do, we just need to take things one thing at a time and just learn the truth of whatever that certain thing is. That's all we need to do. We just need to take this all in stride. But if you know the man I'm married to, he does not, I mean, he is like so laser focused when it comes to just figuring stuff out. And so we start just digging and digging and digging. He's reading, I'm reading. Well, then I got scared. I genuinely got scared because I loved where I was at. I loved everything that I felt like I had attained from the time in the church. And
just to interject one little thing here, we had from our background here. So our time in the church has been constantly. I'm just coming off of 3 stake high councils in a row on 3 separate stakes. Ward mission leader, practicing what I always assigned to missionary work almost. And then now assigned a mission ward mission leader again. I just spoken in state conference. I just spoken in our ward 3 times, all within 4 months. We're going 250 miles an hour trying to like interject all this stuff that we've learned into the valley, you know, since we've only been up there for not very long. And I've got this new calling and I'm just like, whoa, these people are not doing all the stuff that I've learned to be successful. So like, I guess we got to just like start interjecting it here, you know,
And I was working with the young women's, and I love these girls. I love these girls. To this day, I just love them so much. I want their lives to be just full and happy and everything that they can be, you know. And anyway, so we start looking at stuff, but I get scared, and I get angry at Ken. And I'm like, it's his fault. Like, you start scrapping for who to blame, and you certainly can't go back to the beginning because that's way too far away. So you got to have somebody. And I'm like, you this and you that. And he's like, Ruthann, you know me. You know my heart. And I'm like, I know. I do know your heart. And then I feel like, so we had company coming. And at this point, I mean, the anxiety of the reality of what I was learning that were, you know, things that were really true was weighing so heavily. And I was like, maybe we should cancel this. Our dear, dear friends were coming across the country. And I thought, oh, we're going to be such a
dark thunderclap. And what we have in common is missionary work and the church.
And I mean, they're like family. I mean, we just love them so, so much. Anyway, Ken's like, no, we need to get our minds off of this and just enjoy and just make it a wonderful time for them. Let's just be here, you know. So they came, and then they, you know, they went home, and the weight of it was back. And Ken had a family Christmas party right after this. And so he took the kids and went down, and for me, I felt like I needed time to myself. I just really needed to just think, you know, just. And I pulled out my journal, and a couple things about this time. I called every temple in the whole United States, and I would have called foreign temples if I could. I was like, I do not know where this is headed, but I could use all the prayers I could get from anywhere because this is such a struggle, you know. And then I started writing down any time I had had what I would consider a spiritual experience or something that didn't fit in the norm, or, you know, and I wrote them all down. And for me, this was a defining part time for me because it allowed me, you know, as a member of the church, you guys, the church is your link to God. And I felt like it allowed me to step out and say, no, it's much different than that. You know, it's not that the church is not my link to God. That's something completely independent. And I think it gave me the courage that I could pursue, that I didn't need to fear any, you know, learning, as painful as it might be and as uncharted, you know, territory as it was, I could do it with confidence. So Ken came home, and anyway, the next few days we're just digging in, trying to figure things out. Well, then Ken calls.
Ordering, like, well, I mean, at this point, we'd probably ordered and gone down and picked up a big old box full of books from Sandra Tanner's place and gone. I mean, I'd ordered a bunch of books online. We had probably 50 to 70 books at that point, and I'm reading and watching video after video, and just, well, I'm just like, I'm so open. At this point, I just want to know.
And I'll say, like, you know, we didn't want to deal with anti-Mormon literature. I mean, we'd always, in my mind, you know how stories can be created where you take pieces from here and pieces from there, and you can create a whole completely different story than what's really true. We all know this even in communication with other people, you know, this happens. And I had just always thought, you know, anti-Mormon literature is just a crafty way to, you know, like take bits and pieces of the truth. But now that the LDS scholars are acknowledging things that I had never in my life of devoted Mormonism had never ever heard of. I was like, I feel like I couldn't trust them. And so now I'm open up to like, okay, I just want to know the truth. And then looking at that, I can't even take either side's word for it. I wanted to go hold original documents. I wanted to go look at original things to verify for myself that I needed that for my peace of mind. I couldn't just take everybody's word for it. And so
we went down to the special collections department at the Marriott Library, and she went to the BYU Library, and we've got, you know, we're sitting there holding the original, one of the only 18 in existence, Book of Commandments from 1833, and the gal's like, yeah, you're holding $1 million in your hand right now. I'm like, and you're letting us hold this, and I could take you out, you know. Just kidding, I wasn't thinking that. I was just pretty surprised that they let people just sit there and study. We studied from the original, I mean, the 1835 Doctrine and Covenants, and we're looking at B.H. Roberts' personal writing in the margins of his 1830 copy of the Book of Mormon, and looking at his little legend of all these things that he'd written down, and we're just like blown away at all this stuff.
I mean, there was more than that. I mean, we're just holding original things, going to BYU, looking at the same things, and but during this time, Ken reached out to a general authority, and he said, you can tell him about the conversation you had.
On the phone for, mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Oh, sorry about that, yeah. So I get a hold of the cell phone, and I call, and we're not mentioning his name because he's asked us not to mention his name, and just out of respect to him. I mean, he was so gracious, and we're just so grateful that he met with us, and I mean, he just asked us not to use his name, so we're not using his name. But he knows all this stuff, and I knew that he could potentially help us. And at this point, I'm like, if I've ever needed help, I mean, it's right now. And it could be from somebody who knows all this stuff and who still says that they believe. And so how do you do this? And all I'm reading on Fair Mormon is these weird definitions and, you know, translation is not really translation. It's transmutation and all these things. I'm just like, this isn't what I, like, learned and, like, bought off on. I mean... And so I called him, and he's like, I'll meet with you, but I can't be for about a month. He had something going on, and so we had another month worth of studying, and I didn't even know if it was really going to happen or not, but the month goes by. Oh, no, during that conversation, yeah. You want to tell him this part?
I have to add. So I am hearing this conversation from the neighboring room, and I hear him say, look, I need help. He's like, I genuinely need help. I'm really, really struggling. And, you know, like, I and the gentleman told him.
I tell him, look, I have not changed one single ounce of my lifestyle. I don't have any desire to change any ounce of my lifestyle. We just went to the temple. We pay our tithing. We fast when we're supposed to fast. We were like as TBM as you get.
And, you know, I guess this general authority had said, you know, President Monson isn't really able to deal with these things right now. His health is kind of waning in his memory. He does well in front of a teleprompter, but he's really not doing well anymore.
Oh, my God.
And Ken said that
I thought they were all prophets, seers, and revelators. And I'm not just talking about right now. I'm talking about, like, we're talking decade after decade after decade. I was like, if I've ever had a need for, like, modern-day revelation, it's like right now. I need it. I need somebody to reveal to me, like, how do you deal with these things?
And so he gets off the phone, and this general authority gave him this book that would help him.
He told me to go down to the Deseret Book and get it.
And get this book. So Ken gets off the phone, and he's like,
It's Shaken Faith Syndrome by Michael Ash.
Yeah. And Ken is so excited. Like, he gets off the phone. He's already got it on hold. We were getting ready to leave. He goes, we get the book immediately. We go to where we're going, and he kneels down against the bed, and he's, like, flipping through it. He goes right to this section because we were currently working on one specific issue that we were trying to wrestle to the ground, and he starts reading it, and this is me watching him. He's all, no! I mean, he's like...
Talk about deflated.
It was so deflated. I mean, just deflating.
We already knew way too much. I'd already read way too much. I already knew big time way too much information, and... He pointed out that, yeah, there's a couple little parallels here and there, but look at all these unparallels and trying to, like, draw attention. And I'm like, that's called putting up a straw man. And I'm not the smartest guy in the box, but I know this concept of what, don't do that to me right now. I need more than that.
Yeah, just common sense. So we really, really started, like, that time, we just really started talking about how do we handle this? Like, what do we do? Like, and we just felt like we needed to keep learning. We just needed to keep learning. We got to the point where... We were like, we just want the truth. Just give us the hard, heavy truth, but just let it be the truth. You know, that's all we want. and we'll deal with it. We'll pick up the pieces. We'll somehow put it together again. And sorry to get emotional, but we thought about all of our friends and family. We're like, okay, we don't need to worry. We just need to learn. And we had learned in the process when we first started going through this stuff, I had talked to one of my dear friends, and I was telling her, did you know? And she said, that's not true. That's lies. There's no way that's true. And I hung up the phone, and I'm like, it's true. And I realized through this and other experiences that, you know, people don't want to know what rocks their boat and shakes their world, you know, and understandably, I guess I'm the same way, you know, and given a different day and a different time and different scenarios, who knows, you know. But we really wanted to know the truth, and so we just thought, okay, we're just going to keep digging, keep learning until we can meet with the general authority. So we keep on.
At this point, I had personally gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm willing to be objective. I'm willing to really truly view this for, like, I could potentially be wrong, even though I'm weighing all these really powerful experiences that I've had, and I'm starting to say to myself, I can be objective here. I can just, like, I've got a brain, and if this is all I'm working with, I mean, it at least has to, like, stand for reason. It has to, like, not, like, contradict itself. It has to, I mean, it just can't be going on this doublethink stuff. And so I'm at this point very just like, I just want to know. I'm just telling me straight up, I'm willing to accept anything as long as it's the truth. And we're not willing to take anybody's word for it and just muddling through this.
And the whole time we
untangling were just process.
Praying and praying and pleading to help us figure out what was true, you know, just to help us, you know, move through it. So one of the first things we did is we went to my parents. I wanted my mommy and my daddy, you know. I wanted to go, because I felt so betrayed that, and I'm sure many of you feel that way. I felt so much betrayal that why hadn't I heard these things? Why had it been kept from me? Why had things been changed so much? And so we start, you know, addressing all these things, and I went to my parents, and my parents, you know, they had heard that there was stuff out there, but they had never, I mean, they're just busy living good lives. They weren't in, you know, there was no reason for them to go delve into all of that stuff. And I was grateful because I didn't feel like they had betrayed me. Even, you know, they were just being the best parents they could be. And so moving on through that, we finally end up meeting with the general authority. And by this point,
we knew a lot at this point.
We had studied so much. And we were like, you know, if maybe he can give us something that we're missing, some, you know, but we genuinely were hopeful when we went into this meeting with him. And
because, I mean, it's still out there that, okay, so he knows all this stuff, but he still believes. And so, like, I want to know that. I want to know that answer as to how that's happening. Because what I had seen so far from the Givens and from Brand and from Daniel Peterson and from Michael Ash and all these Richard Bush, I mean, I just seen this stuff that was like foreign concept to me. Like, I have to change every single aspect of what I believe in. I mean, I hear I had this CD, and if I was to go and like redo the script for it and like go re-record it, the whole thing, in my opinion at the moment, was like, it would sound so completely unbelievable. It wouldn't be planting any kind of seed anywhere other than just like, you know, spreading the anti-Mormon message all over the place. And so...
And so we went and met with the general authority, and I being very fair, I'm very grateful for this man. I don't care. I mean, in the church, out of the church, he was so gracious, and I'm so thankful for the time he spent, for the energies he put into us. I mean, he didn't have to do it. In fact, it's probably something he didn't want to do, but he was more than willing to do it to help us who were seeking help, you know. And so we address all of our, not all of the issues, there's
just
way.
I really got into just a handful of them.
Of the most critical ones, you know, some of the bigger ones. And
one of the first things that we were talking about was that he had talked about having this big list of, you know, a bunch of things that he had as his own kinds of things that he knew needed to be addressed. And he said, you know, well, the church is doing all this, you know, they're releasing these essays right now. I mean, do you guys know about that? And we're like, yeah, we know about it.
And, which we actually did not know until after we were already like already in our, like we had no idea about it until, yeah, until we were already questioning and learning and stuff. But we did know by the time we met with him.
Right. And so, and he said, one of the first things that I couldn't process this whole thing where I had this general authority thinking of everything, all these thoughts that I've had about general authorities in the past, who is saying to me these words. I said, well, yeah, it's like just so weird that they're like slipping them into the gospel topic section. I mean, here they are being like accused of all these things. I mean, wouldn't you like have like a prophet stand up and say, inasmuch as we have been accused of this, you know, here's the answer. And I'm just like, that just kind of makes sense. We're talking about prophets here. And he said, you know, yeah, it kind of lacks the weight and credibility had the first presidency released it. I'm just like, did he just really say that to me with his outside voice?
He expressed his disappointment with the way it was handled, you know, that he himself really felt like it should have been handled more directly, and it wasn't. And I brought up, you know, I taught seminary 8 years ago. This year I was teaching Doctrine and Covenants when we lived in Florida. And I can still picture holding the manual. I remember one lesson in specific, and the way it teaches this lesson is such a far cry from the truth. And I brought this up, and we were talking about it, and he said, you know, about Joseph, yeah, he wasn't forthcoming about it. So he acknowledged, he knew, you know, but I said, I feel like here I've been betrayed, I've been lied to, and now I'm being used to promote that to the youth of the church. And I'm like, that's just wrong. It's just not right, you know. And yet here I was, you know, doing that. And you know, when I had brought up to, you know, that I had talked with my parents, he said, you know, it's not, he's like, this isn't exactly the, he said, well, it's not something that you want to bring up on family night. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I can see that. We want to talk about.
I can understand why.
I want to teach my kids to be honest. I want to teach my kids, you know, I mean, you can understand why. But Ken said at one point, he's like, okay, we're talking about the only true church.
I said, I thought we had the only true church upon the face of the earth with the Book of Mormon containing which is the most correct book containing the fullness of the gospel. I mean, think of that language. And he said, verbatim, I know the one true church concept, you know, is a very tough sale. It's something our public relations department has never been able to deal with very well. I'm like, did you just say that with your outside voice? I mean, are you here to help? I mean, are we like on the same page? Are we here to help? He was just being honest and just saying just what came to his mind on it. And in my mind, though, I'm thinking, I'm like coming for help. You're trying to find out how to know. And you're telling me that the whole one true church. I mean, I've been saying one true church. I taught the third discussion. I mean, I know I remember the language memorized because it's totally trapped in here. That we are the only true church and that all the other ones are an abomination and yada, yada. And so, anyway, I was pretty rocked getting into this whole thing. Just that he was making these acknowledgments.
Anyway, and he said, you know, I was like, well, how do you believe? Like, how do you still believe? Because we're not wanting to leave. I mean, genuinely not wanting to leave. And he said, when I think, or when there are things that I can't resolve or that puzzle me, I just sort of suspend my feelings about those things and think that in time, if that's going to be necessary, that will be made known to us. And I realize, I mean, it's the shelf. You know, it's what people do, and he's where he's at. He's completely in, completely believes. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we would want to go over.
He had said that he had gotten to a point where he said he was never going to think about it again, never debate about it again, never talk about it again, just didn't ever want to think about it again. He just wanted to live out the rest of his years and just taking all the good things of the gospel and making sure that got into the hearts of his family.
And he said, you know I haven't been of help to you, but he said,
while he was saying that, he said, you know, I know of your sincerity and your honesty. I mean, he confirmed every single thing we talked to him about. I mean, we're learning from him that we weren't just stumbling across lies, and he confirmed every single thing that we had read was in fact true, and that it did need to be kind of redefined if we were going to move forward.
But he said, you know, whether you stay or whether you go, you're going to be okay. And
this is one of the last things he said to us.
I feel so grateful. I walk away and I think of the time with him, and I don't want to be critical. I don't of the way people process things differently. They count the cost differently. They weigh things differently. I mean, it just is what it is. People are in, they're out. You know, they're somewhere in between. And I was just so grateful for the time. But you know, going through.
Well, when we walked out. His front door, and both of us, I mean, she was just like, I just feel so, what did you say?
I said, I feel like I'm on cloud nine. It was the first time, it was the final, we knew we were going. And yeah, I mean, we already had wrestled, and we were like, our integrity, we'd had so many conversations about what do we do, how do we stay, but how do we go? We love all our friends and family. We love the congregation. We love being with these people. How does our integrity allow us to stay? We didn't know how to function being quasi, you know, we just couldn't do it. And for our kids' identity, you know, just the way we thought about things, we just thought, you know, we really, really have to move on. But we walked out, and it was the final, you know, all this emotional trauma. I mean, it was traumatic, you know. I mean, it hit us. I felt like a freight train. Like it just came in and just knocked us off our block. And yet I walked out and I felt so light. And I felt like everything is going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Somehow, some way, it's just all going to be okay.
And while she's feeling this, I am feeling, I can't even say it in one single word different. I mean, that is exactly the way I felt. I just felt like, man, all this like tension and mental like anguish I've been going through and all this. And now I just have like this, I just felt like my mind was just free to, I mean, we'd just been, and not only had it confirmed, but like had it just given this, I mean, I just felt like I was walking light. I mean, we were feeling joy. It was very interesting.
But I'd like to say like that was the end of our journey, but we've learned so many lessons through it all. And we really contemplated how to tell people, how to be respectful, because we learned from, you know, the friend, people don't want to know the truth. And the very fact where we have been so involved and that we're now stepping away screams volumes. We didn't have to get into all the issues or, you know. And anyway, as we've gone on, I had one really tough conversation with a close friend of mine. And this person's been involved in my life for a long time. And anyway, I wasn't even trying to get into a conversation, but we end up in this conversation, and he was telling me he really thought that we were wrong. And I was like, you know, but you know, you don't really have grounds to stand on because you don't know where I've been. You don't know the things I've learned. You don't, you know. But he insisted, and he was getting kind of demeaning, and it's not his nature to be that way most of the time. And he just said, but I think you're wrong. He said, your kids are fine now, but time will tell. You know, time will tell. We'll watch. We'll see. And I remember I left, and I walked away, and I was like, you're looking for me to fail? You're looking for me to fail to justify your inability to wrap your mind around what's going on? All the ways in which you could see us failing or our kids failing, those things happen in the church as much as they happen out of the church. And so, but yet somehow, if that happens, it's an answer, it's okay. And I was hurt. Like, I was really devastated by it for quite, like, about a week, week and a half. And then it hit me one day. I was like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that this, because my knee-jerk reaction was, why am I going to come hang around you if you're looking for me to fail? If you're looking for my kids to fall flat on their face, if you're looking for us, why would I want to go and put myself and be vulnerable in front of you? And then it hit me. The reality of the circumstance is he is where he's at. I am where we are, where we're at. It's the truth. That's what is real right now. And I can't love this person if I choose to pull back and not have a relationship. If me in my defensiveness, and you know, and it hurts because it's integrity, it's honesty, it's true things that have happened that are the reasons that we've left. And so I'm trying to wrap my head around, you know, but then it just hit me. If I'm going to actively love this person, I can't pull away. It's okay. He can think that I'm wrong. He can think that I'm, you know, a year ago if somebody had left, or 2 years ago, you know, 10 years ago, I very well could be in the exact same shoes. And time, life just has a way of teaching. It just really, really does. And it's not because I'm the teacher. It's because life happens. Things happen. And we all deal with it. And we struggle to understand and try and, you know, put things together. But I had, shortly after this, I was walking with an LDS friend and who had been in my ward. And she had said to me, you know, I really, really appreciate that you haven't force-fed the issues.
And this is after we have, we've already put out an announcement. We started a little blog called linkingarms.org, and we just thought, hey, this is how we'll put out the concept. You know, Linking Arms is not an organization. It's not any kind of a, it's just like the concept that shouldn't we all like be linking arms? Who cares what you believe? Who cares what you, who you are? I mean, shouldn't we all just be coming together and caring about each other because we all have so much in common? Don't we all have written across our forehead, understand me, love me, respect me? And we're trying to, like, find ways to rise above this, like, oh, this whirlwind of all this stuff that we're going through.
So I'm lucky with her, and she said, I really appreciate. Oh, and she,
one thing about this, though, is that we didn't, in that, when we made that announcement, we didn't talk about any issues at all. We basically just said, we no longer believe the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the only true church on the face of the earth. And we love you, we respect you, we hope that you can, like, not, you know, reduce us down
Please
to we're not it. Leaving because of any kind of a lifestyle change, you know, we want to make, or we're not leaving for any other reasons other than we've found out some stuff that it makes it impossible for us to believe. But we love you, we love you, we love you, we respect you, respect you. We want to keep all of our friends. We want to, I mean, it has nothing to do with the people. And
so anyway, we're walking, and she's getting ready the following month to teach a lesson in Relief Society on patience. And she said, what are your thoughts about it? And because of the circumstances I had had with this other friend, I thought, you know, I think part of being patient with ourselves, patient with life, patient with circumstances, just patient, is accepting things where they are. I mean, you know, not that we want them, not that that's what we're working towards something different, but we accept them. We accept that that is the reality of where it currently stands. And lots of times, you know, when I'm dealing with my kids, I'm way more patient with them if I accept the fact that they've left their clothes strewn all over, that their crumbs are all over the counter. You know, I mean, it's just a whole lot easier. But we desperately wanted, Ken said, you know, like, you know, we do all have a desire to be understood and a desire to be loved where we currently stand. And part of going through this process is we took and we decided, you know, what are our core values? What do we really believe? What is, you know, and going through all these issues, and we realized that core values really come down to are the way we interact with the world around us, with people. It's that's what it comes down to. I mean, all these things about how we should live, it comes down to relationships and the way we see things. And so Ken started working on it. We started talking about, you know, like, what are these core values? And we came up with a big, big, long list of what our values really are.
We currently have 30 items on there that we have just, you know, it's totally still a work in progress, and we're trying to work on it with our kids, and we're asking them, hey, okay, so here's a list of some stuff we've thought of, you know, what do you think? I mean, you go ahead and go through and select the ones that you feel like you agree with, completely independent of your mom and dad. Just stuff that you know from your own life experience that you would say, yeah, I agree with that. Like, all right, should I be honest? I mean, is it better for me when I'm honest? Is it, you know, is
Why?
Honesty
Why do I want to be
kind
honest?
Of a good
Why
thing
is
for
that
me
a good
in my life?
In
I mean, have I seen the damage that comes into my life if when I'm dishonest? And just walking through some of this stuff. But one of the things I wanted to mention about this process of us learning all this stuff, I naturally, I mean, we're both just very much like people. We love people. And we are trying to be, even though we're dealing with some really difficult things, as I'm sure all of you can imagine, in dealing with all these people who now, we've always been these close confidants, and people have come to us for advice, and we have been connected to all of their things. And now all of a sudden to be perceived as a threat or like as a potential, like, I mean, you know, all the different possible ways that people can see it. And you've all had done a bunch of experiences dealing with this, which is incredibly painful to deal with. And we've gone through the gamut of emotional trauma and just the hardcore, like the bitter and the angry and the, I want my damn money back to you know what? I'm probably not going to get my money back. And so how do I move forward? And going through this whole wide range of this stuff, and I kept on thinking, you know, I don't want to be judged for my weaknesses. I don't want to judge other people by their weaknesses. And so I've got that concept. I've always kind of had that concept, and we really made a special effort when we went through and like kind of itemized out each of the things that became like unanswered, sincere questions that we had. And we really tried to identify and separate the weaknesses of men from flat-out doctrinal contradictions, questions, concerns, you know, these kinds of things that were more meaty for us. But go ahead.
I was going to say that through the process of, you know, it's been, like I said, so painful when you realize it's integrity, it's honesty, it's truth that's taken me in and taken me out. And just yearning for the people that I've been closest to understand me. I want so bad for them to be willing to listen to all my thoughts and my heart. But I've thought, you know, with the circumstance with my friend is that I yearn for that. I want that so bad. And yet I realize I'm not getting that from many. Now, I am getting it from some, but I haven't gotten it from most. I haven't had that. Even at those that are being nice and tolerant and they're more than willing to have us around and they're not seeing us as a threat, they still don't want it to really understand because they realize it is a threat to where they are and where they think, you know, how they think about things. But I realized, you know, that my very desire for that is enough to teach me that that is one of my core values, that I need to give that to people. I need to give them, even though they're not giving that to me right now, maybe in time they will. I don't know. But I can't love them if I'm demanding something I'm not willing to give. And so back to that whole, please love me, please respect me, please care about me where I currently am. We just thought, we just want to give that to people. We want to give that, even though it's so so difficult to deal with all these things. And we recently met up with a friend that we hadn't seen for 8 years, and she knew that we had left. She's a convert to the church in her adult years. And she was like, so what happened? You seem like the same people. I'm like, oh, we are the same people. You know, yes, nothing has changed. But anyway, she said, tell us, you know, and I said, okay, we will tell you some of the issues if you want to know. And she's like, I do, tell me. Like, so we start talking about things, and she said, you know, I want to know the truth of this. And she said, you know what? I respect you. I can understand. She goes, but I have a question for you. She goes, if I decide to stay, even though I know these things, are you going to respect me on my path? And
she was talking about it. She was told us about a brother of hers that has recently had the same kind of stuff happen, and he was not respecting her at all. And so she was just making this assumption that it was most likely going to be like that. And
I said, no. I'm like, we have way more in common than we have different. We have way more in common than we have different. We're people. You know, we're people, and we have desires to be loved and understood, and I can respect that. I just thank you so much for going there to understand me. I'm like, that means a lot.
In this process of meeting with so many different people, we're still getting together, and we just got together with some of our Mormon friends. I mean, we're hanging out with all of them. Their kids are coming over, and we've really tried to do as much as we can of just saying, look, they know that we're not trying to cram it down their throats, and we're getting together, and we're having fun, and we're all, it just, the thing that has become very solidified in my mind, and the way we're really trying to move forward, is this paradigm that I used to have, that I'm going to help you, I'm going to share the gospel with you because I'm going to help you find the same kind of real true fullness of joy and happiness that I have. Going from that paradigm to love above ideology. Relationships above theology. Human connection above belief. And putting belief and putting these things that we find so different from each other, no matter where we are, in its proper place, below love, relationships, human connection, personal, people matter. We all matter. We all have the same needs. We all have these same commonalities. And I see myself constantly, like in my mind, like seeing the potential for slipping into self-sabotage, where I've got this list of core values that I've, they're independent of any kind of an institutional loyalty. I've got stuff that I want to be true to myself, because every single time that I'm not, it makes me sad. I get sad if I'm not being true to myself. That's my core value. It's not somebody else's. It's, I want to be, I want to live according. Now I have mental healthiness. I have peace of mind. I can go forward and I can have a fullness of joy and be happy, which is what I want. And when I'm sitting there feeling like I need to justify, or you know what, when somebody's sitting there bearing their testimony to me, and the feeling that I have of, well, can I ask you a question? Like, what do you think about this? Instead of letting myself go there, instead of letting myself go through with that, just saying, you know what? This person is exactly where they is, exactly where they are, and that's their own life journey. But I still care about them as a person. They can be just as dogmatic about wanting to make sure that their belief is heard as me wanting to make sure I'm defending and knowing why that belief is not exactly the right way. It doesn't matter. That's all just superficial stuff when it comes to the meatier stuff of life, and that these relationships are so much more valuable, especially friends and family and these people that, I mean, the saddest thing in the world is like stepping away from the church and like losing your whole family, like this extended family you've got all over the place. I mean, we did not want to leave. It just like sucks that you like, that it's not right. And the only reason we didn't like to stay was just as a matter of integrity and honesty. And our kids, we're thinking about our five kids. How do we move forward? I mean, what do we want for them? What do we want their identity to be? Their identity of, you know, who they are. I don't want them just to always be kind of labeling themselves as, well, I'm kind of a quasi-Mormon kind of a thing. And I'm like, they got a lot of life left to live. And what do we want for them? And so we just felt like it was the best decision to resign. So after we put out that post, you know, it was like a month later and we were fully resigned. Our kids all, you know, we asked them if they wanted to, and they all agreed. We all walked out.
And I wanted to say something though. We learned some valuable lessons. I mean, we have not handled ourselves by any means perfectly. And we had a couple, well, more than a couple experiences. We tried, before we actually made our general announcement, to actually talk specifically with people that we were closest with, closest friends and family, that, and we would have liked to have talked to more, but we just couldn't get around to everybody. And because we wanted so much for people to understand why, that we weren't just throwing in the towel, we weren't wanting to change our lives, we wanted them to understand the gravity of the issues, we went and met with one of our family that we were closest to, and we were telling them all the issues, and I watched the weight of what happened, you know, what had taken me, even in our fast fashion that we learned it in. It wasn't in one fell swoop, you know, in one evening. And I realized afterwards, you know, we hadn't asked for permission like we did with our friend. We had just, like, thrown it out there, just spilled our guts, you know, and
we threw up on poor gal.
Oh. And I realized, you know, I called her shortly afterwards and we were talking, and she was so sweet. I mean, she's just the sweetest, kindest person. And it really rocked her world. And she said, and I realized I hadn't even thought of apologizing until that moment. I just wanted them to understand. I thought I was doing them a favor for them to understand why I was leaving, you know? And as I talked to her, it just hit me, and I said, "Sarah, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that I just dumped so much on you." And she said, "It was hard. That was really, really hard." And I said, "I'm so sorry. You know, will you please forgive me? It wasn't my intent. You know, we learn life." Life teaches lessons, you know, even with the best of intents. So often we look back and go, oh, well, maybe if I had handled it this way, it could have been better. But when we learn from these things, you know, and we want so much, you know, I have in my my own family. You know, you desperately want, when things are now different with certain family members, you're like, if you could just understand the complexity of the issues, even if you decided to stay, you wouldn't, you know, there would be no problems. you would at least understand, you know. And yet I realized that some of those people aren't, they're not ready. This isn't, for whatever reasons and time, if it's fear, if it, you know, whatever, it's complicated. And that's okay. I want to be part of their lives. I love them so much. And I think it truly is important to keep, I mean, we all come out of this. We're all in this together. I think one of the girls last night at open mic, she said, she quoted, there is meaning in the quest for meaning. We're all in this together, this human experience. We're all going about this. We're all just trying to figure it out. And we're all trying, we come out, we all have differing beliefs. We're all, you know, in different, but even within certain categorizations, I would dare say there are no two people that think, that believe exactly the same. There's some that are very similar, but no two people. And if you put that in its right place, then you can move beyond that. We can all have a really positive life and positive experiences, and we don't have to look at disgust at Mormons because they're where they're at. You know, we can move on. We can be happy. They can be happy, and we can. And you don't know. You know, 10 years ago, that was who I was. 2 years ago, that was who I was. And it's just time to move forward and put things in the right place.
I had an experience a long time ago, and it was so painful to deal with. And I had just, I mean, somebody in my family had made this really just wild assumption that was completely inaccurate, had nothing to do with the reality, and sent me this long letter, you know, just really, I was like, I don't even have the, and I was busy at the time. I'm like, I don't even have the energy to deal with this. And so anyway, I went through the process of dealing with it, going back and forth, and a few letters later, and the overall, in the end, it turned out to be good, and there was understanding, but what came out of it for me was, and I had read this somewhere, I don't remember where it was, but it just turned to be such a reality in my life that is now completely outside of any kind of religious thought, or this is just good sound wisdom for me in my own life, is that the 9 most powerful words in the English language are, I am sorry, I was wrong, please forgive me. When I'm in the middle of not being the best, you know, on my A game as dad, and I've lost my patience with all my kids, or I'm not being the dad I want to be, I'm sad inside, but every single time, independent of repenting because I'm a Mormon, and I'm like, independent of that, I get this powerful feeling of, there's this magical moment that happens when I'm in the middle of saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong, please forgive me. And I just think that I want to move forward and do more when it comes to helping us to come together, helping all of us to come together. We're all the same in so many ways. We all, every single one of us is different, and all we got to do is hang out for a couple minutes and I'll find all kinds of weaknesses about you. But who wants to be defined for their weaknesses? Shouldn't we be coming together and saying, man, have you seen how, like, just like the way that that person does this or that, and then talk to other people about that kind of stuff? All of a sudden we have this better life. In my mind, I want happy. I want to be peaceful. I want to have peace of mind. And I know that I'm one single person on this journey, and that we've all got different places that we are in. And I'm not even saying I know that it's the right way. I'm just saying from my own personal experience, I want to have this happiness. And we're perfectly willing to talk about the reasons that we left. If somebody's coming to us and wanting to know, then we're like perfectly willing to sound. It's like refreshing. It's like we were having this conversation with this guy. He's like, you Mormons, it's like the most amazing thing. I've seen so many of you guys come out of Mormonism. And I just can't even wrap my head around this concept that two adults can't just get together and like just talk about whatever, anybody's opinions about whatever, and then just determine what you believe for yourself. I mean, why is there like any topic that's taboo? Like, do you... He and I was like, well, Let me explain it to you. There's this boundary, and you're perfectly able to have as lively of a debate as you want to, as long as it fits within this nice little tight circle.
You know, I'm reading a book right now, and it's about this mother who's losing a child to a disease, and it's her story around, you know, watching this child suffer and her care for them and trying to make his life as comfortable as possible, and it's this grieving cycle that she goes through. And I've heard this, that it, you know, going through what we've gone through is so similar to losing a child. It's very traumatic. It's traumatic on families. A lot of, like, statistics are high that after people go through a faith crisis, it's almost like losing a child, and the divorce rates go way up. And a lot of times it's not that it's not for because you don't love each other. It's just you're grappling for how to move forward. Like, now what, you know? And so people really struggle. And so I'm reading this book, and she's going through all these grief, you know, the processes of grief, and or the process of grief and all the different aspects. And she says that she came to be very familiar with anger. She said, "Now, I've gotten mad before, and mad comes and it goes." She goes, "I felt angry. I was angry at everything and everyone." And she said, "And then I realized, you know, this isn't going to do me good. It's not going to do my son good. It's not going to do anybody that I love good. So why am I going to be angry? It's time to move on and move past it." And she goes on to explain more and more. And she gets to a point where she's just overwhelmed with the grief and dealing with it all. And she calls her mom. And her mom said, "You know what? Three things. I want you to..." Her mom was a master of lists. Get everything done and have it all organized. And she said, "I want you to write down Grant, her husband, your kids, your family, and yourself." And she said, "Everything else comes second to caring for and loving those people." And the other day, my grandfather was a World War II veteran, and his ship was bombed. And I had not known, he died 30 years ago this year, this past August. And it was his birthday, and I was thinking about him and thinking about his life. And so I pulled out, my grandma had done these books about him, and I had pulled it out, and I'm looking at his World War II picture. There were five boys in the family. They'd all gone off to World War II, and I'm reading the journal of my great-grandmother and the anxiety that she experienced. And as I was going through this, I was like, you know, this is where I come from. These are my people. I love these people. I don't care what they believed. I don't believe now, but that doesn't change my love for them. It doesn't change my respect for who my grandpa was. I learned the story, this heroic story of him that we never knew. I never knew it while he was alive. It wasn't until after he was dead, and it was something he had recorded, and then it was transcribed later. And I love this man. I love this man so much. And I'm so grateful to have been his, you know, and I couldn't have been his if, I mean, just things worked out the way they worked out, you know, and even though some of them might feel like I'm betraying them and the family, I'm not. I'm being true. I'm like, if you could just know our hearts. And anyway.
Even though she's deep, deep, deep Mormon heritage, Jesse Nathaniel Smith is on her dad's side, like, so that second great-grandpa. And Isaac Morley, who our son is named after, is on her mom's side, like fifth great-grandpa.
Right. Anyway. Well, is there anything else?
I don't know. That's our story. Our brains are pretty much empty now. So, Sue, do you want to open up to...
Got a 15-year-old, 13-year-old, 11-year-old, 9-year-old, and 6-year-old.
And they're awesome.
Okay.
Could you ask your question?
When you went to that, I'd like to have you be specific on what the issues were that took you out, maybe the top four, especially that one where you were reading the original version and it corroborated what you had heard.
You know what? We just because we know that there's a lot of people that are going to watch this way beyond this room, and a lot of those people are going to be people that are not going to want to feel like, you know, we don't want them to feel like it's not a, we're not a safe place for them. And that they, I mean, we're articulating all that stuff into a separate like blog post that for anybody that wants to go there and see it can go and see it. But for those that don't want to, I don't want to just like taint this this with that. But they're pretty much the same thing that you all. I mean, we learned all the same kind of stuff, and we're moving forward with this belief that I don't know, but I want to know, and I'm searching, and it feels really good. And I've been finding, even though I came from this background of, it feels really good to just know. We know the purpose of life. We know that everything. We know, and now going from that to really being able to find peace of, I don't know, but man, I want to know, and I'm searching and finding value and just being open and really searching and loving the truth and having the truth be our standard.
What's the blog post?
What we'll do is we're gonna when we post it, I've got it pretty much prepared. We're gonna post it to our Linking Arms. So linkingarms.org is the site, and nobody's really been there in a long time, and so that can be. I mean, so anybody who doesn't want to go there doesn't have to go there, but that's where they'll be. So right now, you can just see like our original post that we put up. It's called A Mile in Our Moccasins, and then we put up one about some clarifications, and then we put up another one about our work in progress, our core values that are a work in progress, just asking for people to, you know, throw out their help for us. So,
I'm really excited about the prospect of sort of building a future after Mormonism. It's not reactionary, it's creative, and I love that sense of a future, you know, like building instead of tearing down. I'm curious if you clearly use Linking Arms for your own purposes. Have others started using it, or have you found like a common thread, a message that you're giving there that has resonated?
Well, I would hope that it would resonate with just all of us, because I just think that it's our way of kind of finding mentally this higher ground of, let's get beyond all this other stuff. That's, I mean, because you won't ever find one other person that's the same. We're all different, and so I would hope that. But I mean, we haven't on purpose. This is not like an organization or anything. This is just a concept, and it's just our way of articulating the concept of, shouldn't we all be coming together, linking arms, independent of any kind of religious thought or philosophies on life or belief systems or whatever? So, does that answer your question, Dwayne?
Yeah, I think so. You've used it so far, but others haven't yet.
No, we haven't. Yeah, we just got this blog and we just put it up on there and.
Great job. And I look forward to being on the panel with you guys tomorrow. I have a question.
Actually, we're leaving right after this.
You're not on it?
No.
Then I am not going to ask you my question.
Oh.
This is going to be a tough question. I apologize if this is not something you want to answer. How would your journey have been different if you hadn't both gotten out together? A lot of us experienced that.
I'd be a mess. I would be a mess. I'm positive that I would be a mess. I mean, I don't know. I don't even want to. I don't have any idea. I would just be speculating, but I know for a fact that I'd be a mess because we're attached. I mean, this girl is my best friend.
You know, I'll say, it has been a journey. You know, we married and we had everything the way we thought about life and the hereafter, and I mean, everything was the same. And so all of a sudden you're in this situation where you're like, whoa, now what? And your mind's digging and digging for answers and looking and just trying to figure things out. And you realize that you think differently about things. You have different experiences from your own life to draw from, and the way you know, personality-wise, how you look at things. And we've been very fortunate to have done as well as we have, though. I'll say we've had, I mean, it's been intense. Like, there's definitely been times that have been, you know, heart-wrenching between us that we had never experienced up to this point. But by learning and really thinking, you know, like, loving beyond the belief, when we put those in the proper place, it's really helped us to respect each other. But if we did, you know, if you had to go for it, because I know that there are so many people that do, and it's so sad to me, and I'm so sorry, but I just know that somehow in the end, you know, when we're true to what we know to be right, and we try and make things right, you know, because there's definitely been things that I've handled incorrectly in ways that are not constructive to our relationship or to, like we were saying, with others. And those, you know, just doing the best to make those relationships the very best that you can, you know, whether you're still married, whether you're not married, whether you're just trying to deal with it all, you know, all I have to know is my own experience, and I've been fairly bad at it at times, and I've been good at it at others, and just trying to learn, you know?
We probably about 8 to 17 times, we almost bailed on wanting to, I mean, we're trying to, like, navigate these waters and wanting to just move it forward. I mean, like, we don't want all of our conversations to be Mormon-centric, and we want to, like, try to find out our new identities, and we're trying to find ways to move on, and so... But the thing that we have seen, when we posted that blog post initially, we had almost 10,000 visits in the first week. And we saw, I mean, I was blown away. I mean, I saw all this human suffering. I mean, people's lives just falling apart. People committing suicide, trying to commit suicide. Marriages just falling apart. Like if our story is jacked up as it is, can help anybody, then let's at least, like, be open to it, you know. But we've seen so much heartache, just so much just pain. We've all felt just huge amounts of it, and I mean we're not done. We're still in the middle of this whole process, but I feel happy. Like, I feel like I have happiness, and I feel that's largely because both of us have been like, let's just put love above ideology, relationships above theology, and human connection above belief, and hopefully we come out on top.
And I'll just add, you know, I told Ken probably like 10 times, if I'm honest, I'm not going with you. Have a great time. I'm sorry. I'm not tonight, about speaking tonight through the process of when we were asked to, because... You know, I realize that each individual journey is so individual. And for some people, you know, it's just different. Everybody's situation, their spiritual journey is indeed their own. And for me, I just feel this sense of, I want to be constructive. I want to move beyond where I've been. I want to learn from my past. I want to, you know, and I think I'm grateful I've come. So don't get me wrong. I thought if I could help one person, it would be so worth it. So in hopes that I can help someone, that my story could somehow help someone, then okay, I'm willing to go. But I think just back to what we were saying, those words, understand me, love me, care for me where I am, please care for, you know, because it's life. It's just life. And,
I almost hate to ask my question because that last answer was so amazing that this takes in a different direction for just a little bit. But I wanted to hear more about the children and how they've adjusted to this situation, and whether they're like, oh, cool, no more church, or whether they're you know, really struggling with it, and how that all played out. I'm sure each one of the children were affected by it in a different way.
Yeah, so our kids, when the night we told them, we just talked to our oldest three, our youngest two that are 9 and 6, because we had promised friends and family that we would talk to our kids about not force feeding the issues and stuff. Little kids tend to just say stuff. So we had just talked with the older three with the specifics of some of the major reasons why. And our oldest, he said, this is not your testimony.
This happened to be our daughter's birthday, and they knew that we wanted to talk to them about something.
Well,
and they were like adamant that it had to be that night.
We were both like, released that.
And it's birthday.
We were both released that Sunday, and the rumor in the area was that we were being released to go be a mission president somewhere. And yeah.
I mean, we heard that from all over the whole state. Like, the Sullivans are going to go be mission presidents.
You might imagine the shock. And, yeah. So our kids were shocked. But our oldest, he said, this is not your testimony. This is my own. And we said, you know what? We will support you. If you want to go on a mission, if you want, we will stand by your side. But out of being your parents and out of respect, because I feeling betrayed, you know, and I had, like I had said, I'd gone to my parents. We told our kids this. I'm like, we felt like we had to tell you the specific reasons why. But we will not force you. Our 11-year-old, who's wise beyond her years, she was angry too, and she's like, I'm going, and I'm going to be there every, you know, and our other daughter was super upset, but very quickly, we said, guys, we just, you know, and we weren't even going to force the issues on them. We're like, do you want to know? And they said, well, yeah, we do want to know. And when we told them, it took them a few days, and they were like,
They were all right within about 2-3 days. I mean, one of our daughters was pretty okay, like, after that same night. The other two were the older ones. And then the littler ones, they kind of just fell asleep while we were getting ready to have our family discussion. We're like, nice, because we don't really want to have to talk to them about this right now.
But, you know, I would say it's still, you know, it's been a roller coaster for me, and it's definitely moved uphill. Like, I definitely can see that there is light and there is joy, and I keep reminding myself, all I have is right here. It's the people in my presence right now, and I need to be here now, and I can give what I can give. I have what I have, and we've really tried to talk with that with our kids, you know, just being present and not worrying too much. And so my son, he came home from school the other day, and he sat down at the bar, and we were talking.
Our oldest,
he's just a great, great, great kid. And we were just talking about something, and he goes, Mom, because all of a sudden I just felt this sadness about leaving the church. And I'm like, just right then, I didn't cry then, but I cry now because I can so relate, because I've had days that'll just hit me, and I'll just be like, I miss it so much. I miss it. I genuinely miss the community, the connectedness, all what I perceive as, like, that I've taken good. I've missed it so much, you know, And yet, I said, if you remember, I told him about that story about that mother losing her child and what her mom said. I said, you put us first, your family, and the people that are right in front of you. I'm like, if you remember to keep an open heart, to seek for the truth, and to love the people in your path, you're going to be okay. And he's like, yeah, I know. And he's like, most of the time, I'm totally fine, you know. But every once in a while, it hits. And he's a guy, so it doesn't hit as often for him. Like, for me, I've been like, it'll be up and down and up and down. But it's definitely, definitely headed in a good direction.
But overall, they all are just doing remarkably well. And I think mostly because we're still hanging out with all the same people, and we just don't go to church on Sunday with them. I mean, we went to a triple Lindy farewell not too long ago, and, you know, everybody's, oh, it's so nice to have you back and stuff. And they've gone and done some different activities, and I just went on a shooting activity with a daddy-daughter date thing with the daddies and daughters going and shooting shotguns, and went back to the church and ate Sloppy Joes with everybody, and they're all kind of like, you know, I'm the elephant, the proverbial elephant in the room. And, you know, it's like, but they were also just really like, hey, we're glad you're here. I mean, they really were genuinely glad that I was there. And regardless of whatever, if they're thinking, oh, well, maybe they're on their way back, or I don't care what they were thinking, I really like these people. And they're great people. And Mormons have adopted some of the very best ways to live. And I want my kids to be around good influences and some, you know, so just like all kinds of other people have adopted some of the best ways to live. I mean, they don't have the corner on the market when it comes to all that good stuff.
Thank you so much.